This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
A war of words in Iowa. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay on this Wednesday, June 12th. Here's what we have for you this hour.
2020 campaigning ramps up as President Trump and former Vice President Biden trade barbs in Iowa.
Comedian Jon Stewart, a longtime advocate for 9/11 survivors, takes his case to Capitol Hill.
The House authorizes going to court over subpoenas for William Barr and Don McGahn.
And fights over tariffs and immigration are splitting voters in Arizona.
President Trump's, threat to put tariffs on Mexico, which would have hurt a border state economy like Arizona's, was very much opposed by that wing of the party.
A look at the changing demographics of voters in Arizona with Trip Gabriel of the New York Times in about 10 minutes. President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden exchanged barbs from opposite ends of Iowa, offering a preview of a potential general election face-off. The two candidates appeared for the first time in the same state as the 2020 race takes shape. Trump aimed to energize his core supporters in a state he easily carried in 2016, but where his aggressive tariff moves have disrupted business for farmers and drawn bipartisan criticism from elected officials. In Council Bluffs, the president spoke about his administration's ethanol policies, but also took shots at Biden.
I'd rather run against, I think, Biden than anybody. I think he's the weakest mentally. And I like running against people that are weak mentally. I think Joe is the weakest up here.
Biden made the case that he's the Democrat best equipped to defeat Trump. He offered a takedown of the president's time in the White House before a cheering crowd.
I don't think the president really gets the basics. He thinks these tariffs are being paid by China, just like he thinks Mexico is building a wall.
A poll of 600 likely Democratic Iowa caucus goers released over the weekend showed Biden leading the rest of the Democratic field with 24%. Comedian Jon Stewart slammed representatives at a House Judiciary Subcommittee hearing on funding for the September 11th Victim Compensation Fund, saying it was shameful that more of them did not attend. The fund, which was established 9 years ago to provide health care benefits to first responders and others in the community with illnesses related to the 2001 terror attacks, is running short of money. In his emotional testimony, Stewart at times broke down in tears.
These men and women and their response to it is what brought our country back. It's what gave a reeling nation a solid foundation to stand back upon, to remind us of why this country is great, of why this country is worth fighting for. And you are ignoring them.
Congress passed the Compensation Act in 2010 over opposition from some Republicans who balked at its $7 billion price tag. The act was reauthorized in 2015 for 90 years, but a portion of it, the Victim Compensation Fund, was only funded through the end of 2020. The fund aimed to provide necessary financial support for the thousands who suffered serious medical issues, including a spate of cancer diagnoses after the 2001 attacks. The House has approved a resolution greenlighting the House Judiciary Committee to go to court to enforce its subpoena for former White House counsel Don McGahn's testimony and to seek grand jury information from special counsel Robert Mueller's report. The resolution also authorized the House panel to take its subpoena of Attorney General William Barr to court, but an agreement struck between the Judiciary Committee and the Justice Department on Monday means the committee won't take that action, at least for now. Judiciary Committee Chairman Jerry Nadler.
As I've said before, we are facing a constitutional crisis. We have a president who believes he is above the law, which he is not, and refuses to be held accountable, which he will be.
In addition to the subpoenas for Barr and McGahn, the resolution also includes language empowering committees to go to court to enforce subpoenas in the future while bypassing a floor vote. a potential prelude to more litigation pitting the Trump administration against House Democrats. The resolution passed along party lines. It's 11 minutes after the hour.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business, but you don't have to take our word for it. Take Patty Poppes, president and CEO of Consumers Energy, instead.
All of the innovation that's occurring around robotics, AI, it's happening here in Michigan. We have chemical companies, we have pharmaceutical companies, we have medical device manufacturers. Michigan is a magnet for innovators and dreamers.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. There are now even more ways to get This Morning on Demand. Download the This Morning with Gordon Deal app for your Apple or Android device. Find our daily podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and more. Or tell Alexa or Google to play This Morning with Gordon Deal, and you'll instantly be connected to America's First News. Arizona was once a reliably Republican state. Now it's increasingly up for grabs due to divisive issues such as tariffs and immigration. Trip Gabriel of the New York Times is here with more. Trip, how has President Trump divided Republicans in Arizona?
Well, most notably on his, you know, harsh line on immigration. And I'll quickly throw in a caveat that the Donald Trump won Arizona by 3.5 percentage points, and the Republican base is certainly very strongly behind him still. But it's also been a state that, you know, anyone remembers John McCain and Jeff Flake, both previous Republican senators, has a very strong, kind of so-called establishment Republican constituency, and they tend to be of a different breed than the Trump base, and they're a very pro-business constituency. And President Trump's, you know, threat to put tariffs on Mexico, which would have hurt a border state economy like Arizona's, was very much opposed by that wing of the party. And these are folks who are, you know, the affluent, well-educated suburban voters, by and large, white. And they're, you know, the ones that are potential swing voters in any kind of election that is a referendum on Donald Trump.
Have the demographics of Arizona changed a great deal over the past few years?
They've changed a great deal over probably a longer timeline than just the last few years. But, you know, it's been a slow but definitely strong change. I mean, Arizona, people remember Arizona, you know, if you go back to the 60s or something, it was a state of older retirees from the Midwest. There's been a tech boom in the greater Phoenix area, which is brought a lot of high-tech workers from California and from India and other parts of the world, and they bring in more liberal political values. There's also been a very significant explosion, really, of the Latino population and Latino vote, which is not as Latino voters don't turn out in as high a percentage compared with some other groups, especially whites. But it is a growing factor, and, you know, if you compare it to a state like New Mexico or a state like Colorado, which are probably a couple of years ahead of Arizona in terms of the impact of Latino vote, Arizona is heading in that direction.
We're speaking with Trip Gabriel of the New York Times about the political climate in Arizona. How did the midterm election results maybe foretell what could happen in Arizona?
It was a very good midterm for Democrats, you know, as it was in some other states around the country. But Kyrsten Sinema picked up a United States Senate seat, an open seat. It was a very close race, but some of the statewide offices were more revealing. Democrats won important statewide offices like Secretary of State, and they even picked up a few seats in the state legislature, which has generally been, you know, dominated by hard right conservatives and have, you know, produced some of the kinds of laws that have attracted national attention, like a crackdown on undocumented immigrants back in 2010. Turnout was very high, particularly among Latino voters. I mean, more Latino voters came out in the midterms in 2018 than in 2016, which is almost unheard of for a midterm. But certainly Democrats hope that is pointing toward the future.
Would it be an oversimplification to say on the immigrant issue, there are those who don't want the immigrants here saying they're taking resources and the people who do saying they're needed for the labor force?
No, I think that's absolutely correct. It's not even a simplification. I mean, I hear this all the time, not just in Arizona, but, you know, it's it might even be, you know, best explained by there's just a value, a division, you know, among voters based on kind of a core value.
Thanks, Trip Gabriel of the New York Times. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jennifer, in Iowa, Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden found fault with President Trump everywhere he went, making it his mantra that the current president is, in his words, a threat to our core values.
4 years of Donald Trump will be viewed as an aberration in American history. 8 years will fundamentally change who we are as a nation and how we're viewed around the world.
President Trump's insults for his main rival started before he left for his own appearances in Iowa.
He looks different than he used to. He acts different than he used to. He's even slower than he used to be.
The president visited an ethanol plant and a fundraiser where 5 climate change activists were arrested for blocking the entrance. President Trump refused to discuss details of his immigration deal with Mexico, with reporters saying they were secret, but unintentionally let some slip anyway, waving a sheet of paper that had the specifics of the deal written on it. Images of it, enlarged by the press, show a plan to designate Mexico a safe third country. That would mean migrants' asylum applications would be processed there rather than in the U.S. Hong Kong police used tear gas, pepper spray, and high-pressure water hoses against thousands of protesters blocking entry to Hong Kong's government headquarters today. The protesters opposing a proposed extradition bill which would allow criminal suspects to be sent for trial to mainland China. A prosecutor in the case of a missing Connecticut mother of 5 says the woman's blood was found mixed with her estranged husband's DNA at her home. The disclosure came as Fotis Doulos and his girlfriend, Michelle Traconis, pleaded not guilty to evidence tampering and hindering prosecution in connection with Jennifer Doulos' May 24th disappearance. Police have accused the pair of disposing of items containing Mrs. Doulos' blood. Federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies around the U.S. have made some 1,700 arrests in an investigation nicknamed Broken Heart that targeted suspected child predators. The crackdown zeroed in on suspects who produced or possessed child pornography, who tried to entice kids online for sex, traveled to other states or countries to abuse kids, or engaged in sex trafficking. And as part of its 100th anniversary celebration, the International Astronomical Union is giving every country on Earth the chance to name an exoplanet and the star it orbits. Look for America's IAU to launch a national campaign to solicit name ideas from the public. I'm thinking Kay Kashinka sounds very good.
I'm always thinking of kitten names, so I'm going to have to come up with something for a planet. You're
Mittens?
Just looking at me. You're looking at me with
a
crossed
planet
eyes.
Named Mittens?
I didn't say Mittens. Here's something you might want to think about. Artificial intelligence can detect cheating. MarketWatch's Andrew Keschner joins us now to talk about some ways companies are using AI to combat cheating. Andrew, how is technology being used to help employers with job references?
Well, one of the new ways is this a new program where references fill out questionnaires that get measured against each other to figure out just how candid someone is being about how good they are at certain job skills, and measures what the candidate is saying against how the references, how it stacks up to the references, and he puts some numbers on it versus just a really glowing phone call or a letter.
So is that working well to weed people out?
I think the jury's still out on it. It's, the company doing it is a new company. They've been kind of in testing mode for the last year, and they've only just started to formally, come to market earlier this month. They want to expand and, bring their product in a lot of places, but maybe there are going to be employers out there who just want the regular old, give me 3 references and I want to call them. But so it remains to be seen.
Andrew, I thought what was very interesting in your story is how AI can spot cheating on academic essays and that kind of thing. It could really be used in schools and in settings like that.
That's right. Well, there was one Danish study that came out last month where they had developed a program basically analyzing the word choices and words used in papers and compared them to past work to see if it really was the student or maybe this was, someone else doing it, a different style of writing. In fact, there's actually one company out there called Turnitin that has already been doing something like this, analyzing, you know, the word usage in papers to, you know, to see if it's suspicious or not. And they've, you know, they've already worked in many many countries with lots of, you know, lots of different schools. So it's definitely happening there.
We're speaking with MarketWatch's Andrew Keschner. Another area where AI is being used is in eating and health, and they can figure out who's cheating on a diet.
That's right. Yeah, this is an experimental app that's still, you know, it's not out there. It's not in the, you know, available for public consumers yet, but it's something being developed by folks over at Drexel University. And what it's doing is it's sort of predicting based on past lapses in a diet, it's predicting when another diet lapse could happen. So, for example, if it's late at night and you're feeling stressed and maybe you've turned to that pint of ice cream in the past, this time the app will say, there's a possibility you're going to lapse, and no. So, but it's still under development. But, yes, that was a very interesting one.
Good stuff from MarketWatch's Andrew Keschner. It's coming up on 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
This human resources professional is crushing it, thanks to Kronos. And this is his hype song.
You can fall back with the pack. I'm a leader pack.
I've got HR, payroll, talent, and time.
I'm on the top. I'm gonna rise up. Now we are
engaging all the best people.
Blast off to the front of the field. It's
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show, like us on Facebook, or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
On this Wednesday, June 12th, Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay. Some of our top stories and headlines: thousands of protesters block Hong Kong roads over a China extradition bill. Comedian Jon Stewart blasts Congress on behalf of 9/11 first responders. A new Quinnipiac poll puts Biden over Trump by a double-digit margin. The U.S. women's soccer team sends a message with a 13-0 rout over Thailand in World Cup play. And fascination with a snake that rolls over and plays dead. That story in about 20 minutes. If you've driven through the Orlando area lately, you know what a nightmare the road construction is. This morning's Gordon Deal has more on a massive project being undertaken in Florida to fix a crumbling interstate.
We're speaking with Arian Campo Flores, Wall Street Journal reporter. He's written a piece entitled, "The Interstate is Crumbling. Try Fixing the Section Used by 200,000 Vehicles a Day." Some of these numbers you put together are just staggering, but it could explain the scope of this project that's happening in and around Orlando.
Yeah, well, this is one of the largest roadway projects there is in the U.S. at this point. It's also the largest public-private partnership that's been done in the state of Florida ever. And it is the widening of Interstate 4 going through the Orlando area. It's 21 miles of an area that, you know, 50 years ago when it was first built, was a sparsely populated area and is now one of the fastest growing cities in the country, a dense area with office towers and malls and arenas and condos, and that, you know, is also one of the most visited places in the U.S. 75 million visitors a year come to see Walt Disney World and Universal, right. And all of that is moving through this very congested area, and the highway is just outdated and in dire need of repair. The challenge is, of course, doing all of that while you still have, in some sections, 200,000 vehicles a day moving through.
Boy, I knew that was a busy area. But what I did not consider, I guess, is the way you described how tight the space is with, you know, like developments really close to the highway. So there's not a lot of ways you can kind of reroute traffic or bring in the big equipment.
Exactly. I mean, that's one of the biggest challenges of this. And it's something that, you know, other urban areas are experiencing. You know, the interstate highway system in some areas, decades ago, when it was first being built, was in areas with much more room to kind of move around in. A lot of those areas have now grown up, and so now you have these dense cities that have emerged right alongside the highway and have hemmed it in. And so it's a real jigsaw puzzle for the constructor that that is handling the project, because you obviously have lots of workers you need to move in, lots of pieces of equipment, lots of supplies and materials, and the under the contract, the builder is required to keep the same number of lanes open during the day as there were before the project started.
Oh, wow.
So what they've had to do is a number of things. They, you know, they've made the lanes a little tighter. They took a foot off of each lane, so the cars are crammed a little closer, and they're just constantly having to shift traffic to the left onto the median, to the right onto the shoulder, create temporary ramps, create, you know, temporary throughways, just a constant kind of moving of things around so that they can create just enough space to be able to work on, say, one particular lane, and then when they get done with that, shift things over and then work on another piece of it. And that's just this been this continuous orchestration.
We're speaking with Arian Campo Flores, Wall Street Journal reporter. He's written a piece about this massive reconstruction project in Central Florida, Interstate 4. Is it limestone, too, that causes sort of these unpredictable sinkholes at times while these crews are driving whatever into the ground?
Yeah, that's another big challenge that the project has had, and it's actually one of the reasons why they've had delays on it. So the topography of this area is complicated for engineers, because it is, like much of Florida, it has this porous limestone underneath, and it's a topography that's prone to having sinkholes. And so you need to be very careful in terms of how you go about drilling or banging pilings into the ground that support, you know, the bridges and the overpasses and all of the structure of the interstate. And so they had one incident in this one congested area near downtown where there is an electrical substation. And because of that substation, which is sensitive to vibration, they had to do a different type of support for the bridge. And that support ended up failing repeatedly. And so it set the project back. It required a lot of kind of, you know, revamping of plans to get around that obstacle. And it's just one more example of, you know, the challenges that you have in building in an area like this.
This morning's Gordon Deal with Arian Campo Flores of the Wall Street Journal. It's 20 minutes before the hour. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. Well, if your teens play video games, there's a good chance they found their way to the Discord chat service. That may not be where you want them. Julie Jargon of the Wall Street Journal is here with more. Julie, what is Discord?
Discord is a chat service for really anyone, but it was initially designed to be a place for video game players to gather and talk in real time while they're playing video games. And they have voice, text, or video chat.
Is it targeted to any particular age?
They say that they don't collect any data on their users, and so that they don't know exactly, you know, how many, you know, what the breakdown is of their users. But clearly it is targeted at gamers, and there can be a pretty wide swath of people playing video games, but, you know, largely that's teenage boys.
Julie, from the time it really started until now, what did the numbers look like?
It's really exploded. The rise of really popular online multiplayer games like Fortnite has really contributed to its rise. And they have more than 250 million registered users now, which is an increase of which is up from 130 million a year ago. And there are 850 million messages exchanged daily on the app.
So the appeal of this is that it offers real-time conversation. How does it differ from other things?
Yes, it's real-time, 24/7 live chat. So anytime someone wants to pick up their gaming controller and talk to somebody else, somewhere else who's playing the same game, they can find someone to talk to.
We're speaking with Julie Jargon of the Wall Street Journal. Now, Julie, your story talks about you trying this out. Tell us about your experience.
I just poked around for like 15 minutes or so looking in different areas. I wasn't looking for anything specific, but it didn't take long to get into these groups, these sort of chat groups, where there was a lot of porn and there were a lot of inappropriate memes that people were sharing. And, you know, that's kind of the issue here, is that a site that attracts a lot of young people, you know, makes it pretty easy for them to find stuff that their parents might not want them to be seeing.
If you're a parent, what can you do about this?
Well, you can not allow them to use Discord, for one thing. And apparently there's a lot of peer pressure, though. It's kind of the cool site for teenagers who like gaming to use. And so there is sort of that fear of missing out for those who don't partake. But, you know, there aren't any real parental controls in terms of limiting kids to any particular group within Discord. It's a pretty free-ranging area where kids can get into any area, even the ones that are marked as having adult content. A little message pops up that says, click here if you're at least 18. So anyone can click on that. You know, you don't even have to lie about your age. You just click on that, and in you go. So unfortunately, there's not a whole lot parents can do. There are a couple of things in the settings that you can choose to restrict what friends you want to have join your group. You can choose to put on a filter content for direct messages that come to you, but in terms of the content that's just widely available in the different private little communities on Discord, there's no way to really filter that.
What does Discord say about this?
They maintain that privacy is important, and so they don't go in and monitor the particular private groups unless there's a complaint that is brought to their attention, and then they will investigate it. They say that it's really up to parents to help their children learn how to navigate all aspects of the internet, including Discord.
And Julie, how does Discord make its money?
They have a subscription service for some of their games that they offer within Discord, but outside of that, it is free for anyone to download. And anyone can create one of these, what they call servers, but these are little communities where people can come and chat. So there are no restrictions or cost associated with doing that.
Thanks, Julie. Julie Jargon of The Wall Street Journal. It's 12 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jennifer, former Vice President Joe Biden hit the campaign trail in Iowa on the same day President Trump was in the state, with each of them taking verbal swings at the opponent each hopes to defeat in November 2020. Biden joked about Trump's grasp of basic concepts.
I don't think the president really gets the basics. He thinks these tariffs are being paid by China, just like he thinks Mexico's building a wall.
President Trump took his own shots.
Joe Biden thought that China was not a competitor of ours. Joe Biden is a dummy. Joe Biden thought China was not a competitor.
Back in D.C., comedian Jon Stewart was more than serious. He was furious at a subcommittee meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to reauthorize funding for people with illnesses linked to 9/11.
The idea that you can only give them 5 more years of the VCF because you're not quite sure what's going to happen 5 years from now. Well, I can tell you, I'm pretty sure what's going to happen 5 years from now. More of these men and women are going to get sick and they are going to die.
A heat wave in the western part of the country is slowing down trains in Portland and raising the brush fire risk across the region. A newborn baby was rescued from inside a scorching dumpster in Stockton in Northern California, where temperatures topped 100 degrees. A passerby heard the crying, and the infant is now hospitalized in stable condition, his 15-year-old mother facing charges of child abuse and neglect. Uganda has recorded its first case of the Ebola virus. It's believed to have spread via a 5-year-old visitor from the neighboring Democratic Republic of the Congo, battling an outbreak that's killed hundreds since last August. A stunning reversal in the case of Russian journalist Ivan Golunov. Jailed in Moscow on dubious drug charges, protests and even state media backlash had rare success, and he's been freed. Police responsible for his arrest have reportedly been suspended, and the Kremlin has admitted mistakes were made. Two giraffes were killed instantly when they were struck by lightning at a Florida wildlife habitat. Officials at the Lion Country Safari Park near Miami say the freak accident happened during a thunderstorm 6 weeks ago. There are 18 remaining giraffes in the park. They have access to shelter, but they're giraffes. They have to choose to use it.
That's a sad story, Ross. I don't like that one.
Then forget it.
All right. We didn't hear that. It's 7 minutes before the hour. Zombie snakes are going viral. USA Today says news stories about the reptiles began circulating this week after park officials in North Carolina posted photos on Facebook of a snake that acts like an opossum. In the post, they asked, who is this famous NC snake, a cobra, a zombie snake? The answer is an eastern hognose. The snakes are mostly harmless to humans. Known for rolling on its back and opening its mouth, the eastern hognose snake often plays dead to prevent predators from attacking. When threatened, they often hiss and inflate their necks like a cobra. They may strike after hissing, but they almost never actually bite. After it's touched, it writhes around as if it's in agony, and it goes limp and lies on its back. After a few minutes, it will check to see if the predator is gone. In the Facebook post, North Carolina park officials also called the snake a harmless one. The post was promoting the Parks Division Year of the Snake program that aims to scale back your fear about snakes. Hognoses are common in the Southeast. The bottom line, if you see any snake, calmly walk away and leave it alone. Or if you're like me, scream, run like hell. That'll do it for this hour. For Rossa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
As a small business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.